Okay, Boker Tov, everybody. I think we can get started. Hope everybody's doing well, having a nice Hanukkah, enjoying the relatively very, the, not the, for December, the beautiful weather, you know. So everybody, hopefully everybody has a nice Hanukkah, Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh. Okay, so we hopefully today we'll finish up Al Hanisim, and then we'll see what's, do a few other things relating to Hanukkah, and then please God, next week, we'll get back to sort of the beginning of the Seder, Birchat HaShachar, that we're in the middle of. Okay, so we're discussing Al Hanisim. I just want to, I'll begin just by saying a point I didn't, just a cute methodological point. I always love to quote in the other context how the Rambam, the super genius Rambam, besides his absolute unparalleled brilliance in every field under the sun, was an unbelievable organizer. And just his style. For if you don't read one word in the Rambam, you just look at his stylistic thing. So, you know, apparently this was only discovered like 100 years ago. You know, there are 1,000 chapters in the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah. It's not a coincidence for sure. There are 1,000 chapters. Everything is so organized, the structure. So where I mentioned last week that the Rambam puts, I don't think I mentioned this last week. If I did, let me know. But what I did mention is that, the Rambam combines Hilchot Rosh Hashanah and Sukkos and Lulav. We always combine Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. The Rambam sees sort of the shofar and Lulav as two parallel ways to worship God. That we discussed last week, and Rav Soloveitchik developed that at great length. The shofar is prayer without words. The shofar is approaching God through fear. This we didn't talk about. And the Lulav is approaching God in joy. You know, but what's interesting is I don't think I mentioned the Rambam puts the laws of Hallel in Hilchot Chanukah. We discussed that the Rambam puts Megillah and Purim together. Hilchot Chanukah begins in chapter 3. Like it is, he calls it Hilchot Megillah. We mentioned not Purim. It's Megillah, Hilchot Megillah, and Hilchot Chanukah, and they're together because it's a rabbinic law. The authority of Purim and Chanukah are the similar. It's not the details. It's the fact that the rabbis, as we'll get to a little bit later, hopefully, as the rabbis commanded us to follow the rabbinic holiday. So there's one source. It's not the individual mitzvah, it's the rabbinic mitzvah. So he puts it together. So chapter 1 and 2 are both about Purim or Megillah, and chapter 3 and 4 about Chanukah. But in chapter 4, the Rambam discusses all the laws of Hallel, because Chanukah, we say Hallel. How many days a year do we say Hallel? Real Hallel, not the Hallel that we say on Rosh Chodesh. That doesn't count. That's a later minhag. Many people, I think the Sephardim, do not make a brach on that Hallel. It's a minhag. But okay, we've adopted it. Very nice. The 6 days of Pesach, it's also minhag, doesn't really count. It's only the first day of Pesach. So we only say Hallel 18 days a year, unless you live in if you live in Israel, you say 18 Kiminyan Chai, right? If you live in Chutz Laaretz, you get an extra 3 days. You get an extra day on Pesach, an extra day on Shavuos, an extra day on Sukkot, 21 days. So 8 of those days are on Chanukah. That's like almost half of Hallel that we say all year is on Hallel. And the other 8 days are on Sukkot. So 16 out of 18 days that we say Hallel are Chanukah and Sukkot. The Gemara discusses Hallel in the third parak in Masechet Sukkah, Lulav HaGazul. Masechet Sukkah, when it takes the Lulav, that's what we do. We take the lulav in the middle of Hallel. Everything is, I always say, the Gemara is edited with such precision. People who learn Gemara younger and they don't learn it again, or they don't learn it properly, yeah, the rabbis went on random tangents and whatever they put together. It's so not true. And they did go on tangent, but every tangent has a connection. When they edited, the tangents were edited, and they're all connected. So the Agadata, the legal and the non-legal sections of Gemara always coincide, right? I mentioned like the stories of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash are in Masechet Gittin about a divorce, this husband and wife divorce, and God and the Jewish people had a mini divorce. So everything is the law, the Agadata, the beautiful stories of the love of the land of Israel are in Ketuvot, because that Ketuvot, the marriage bind, the love between the husband and the wife, everything is so properly edited. So the laws of Hallel are in Sukkah. That's where they were edited in Masechet Sukkah. And we take the lulav in Sukkah. So the Rambam should have put Hilchot Hallel in Hilchot Sukkah, but he didn't do that. Rambam transferred them from Sukkah to Hanukkah, linking Hanukkah and Sukkot. That's going to be my next bar Torah that I'm sending out on Hanukkah. The many, many, many links between Hanukkah and Sukkot, which so I won't really go into them much here, but I guess the most famous one is Beit Shammai, why we light candles 8 to 1, right? Right. Everybody know, I'm sure most people know, I think, that we do the Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin. You only have to light one candle every night, right? That's it. That's the mitzvah. We have this weird thing by Hanukkah, Mahadrin, beautiful the mitzvah, more beautiful the mitzvah. We add, you know, so we go 1 to 8, but that's only Beit Hillel's opinion. Beit Shammai's opinion, go 8 to 1. You start big, right? Sort of, I think that's how we all are. Believe me, we celebrate the first night of Hanukkah. By the 8th night, you know, how many latkes and sufganiyot are you eating? Okay. Or how much, you know, alanisim, whatever, you know, by the 8th night, okay, enough already. But, always a big holiday or lahavdil, you know, Christmas, it's always the first day or lahavdil, Pesach, you know, it's always the first day. You get excited. So that's Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai says, wow, the first day. It diminishes, the holiday becomes less. And Beit Hillel says no. But why Beit Shammai? So the Gemara, one of the reasons it's gives, the Gemara has two reasons, Parei HaChag, because on Sukkot, went in descending order. So, well, that's what I'm going to, my next Dvar Torah book. But that's, it's clear there are many, many connections between Sukkot and Hanukkah. And the Rambam puts the laws of Hallel in the laws of Hanukkah. Okay, that's just a stylistic point. Okay, let's get back to Al-Anisim, you have in your Seder. So last week we raised the question we did not answer. I don't think we answered the question. Why Al-Hanisim makes only mention of the war and no mention of the miracle, and yet the Gemara does the exact opposite. When the Gemara discusses the Yontif, not really Yontif, when the Gemara discusses, you know, Hanukkah, it makes no mention of the war. It only mentions the miracle of the oil. So why is that? Does anybody want to suggest some? And I don't know that I have a great answer to this question, but that's why I want to hear your answers. I have a few ideas. I know that anybody has a great answer. Anybody? Okay. So I'll start at the Torah Tamima. We've been Torah Tamima who passed away around the 1940s. Rav Baruch HaLevi Epstein, the son of the Aruch HaShulchan, always a creative thinker. So the Torah Tamima says that the reason we don't mention the miracle of the oil was, you know, very few people knew about it. Who knew about the miracle of the oil? Eight and a half Kohanim who were in the temple knew about it. But what would be in the newspaper would be in the newspaper would be about the war. So they wouldn't, therefore, they downplayed the miracle of the oil. So that's a very, whatever, take it as you'd like. Of course, that may explain Al-Hanisim. That may explain why Al-Hanisim, we discussed the war in great detail. So why does the Gemara do the reverse? That's very nice. So why in the Gemara is it exactly oil and not? So I thought, and that's connected to this, that davening and learning are two different ideas. We say Al-Hanisim when we daven. That's in tefillah, b'hoda'ah. That's how we say it. We discussed last week, last night's shiur in the parsha. Leah discussed why you say yala v'yavon avoda by ritzei, but we do halal in modim. We say alanisim in modim. It's in the middle of our davening. Learning is very different. I think one of the most, you know, commented of our Divrei Torah I ever wrote, and one of the most beautiful ideas, you know, Rav Soloveitchik, I'm sure I've mentioned it over the years. Rav Soloveitchik develops this beautiful theme, how prayer and learning are contradictory mitzvot, right? Prayer requires, as he put it, and I'm not going to say it as well, you have to listen to it. It's so beautiful. Over 2 hours, he explains, prayer is innocence. Only a child can pray. Prayer means I'm totally dependent on God. If you're not dependent, if you don't have needs, you don't pray. We discussed that in our first class, according to the Ramban. If you have no needs, you don't have to pray. That's it. That's simple. Well, why pray? I've got everything I need. That's why modern man finds it hard to pray. I'm one of the reasons. Because thank God. Thank God we find it hard to pray. Thank God we have a lot of money. So people prayed a little bit more maybe in COVID. When there's a chas v'shalom, a terrible disaster, World Trade Center, they pray more. But when life is going well, it's hard to pray because we don't have so many needs. Good. That's maybe it's bad that it's hard to pray, but it's good that it's hard to pray that we don't have so many needs. And only a child can pray and only an adult can learn. Prayer means total dependence on God. I'm a nobody. I'm a nothing. God does everything. And learning is the exact opposite. Learning, you debate and you question, you critique, and you don't accept anything. Who cares who says? The whole tradition of learning is we don't respect authority. I mean, we respect them, but we don't respect persons. You know, who cares? We analyze what they say, and Tosfot could argue on Rashi, and goodbye. I don't care. Like, we can argue. That's what we do. Learning is totally different. So I thought that along that theme, prayer is very practical. What do we pray for? Health and wealth and intelligence and peace and justice. We pray for basic things. So the Aleph Beit, if the Maccabim would have lost the war, we wouldn't be here today. That would be the end. Jewish history would have ended, right? That's it, over, Gemara, finished. So on prayer, we have to pray for very practical things. And learning the Gemara is written hundreds of years later. I'm sure Al-Anisim, we'll get to Al-Anisim, may be written at around that time, or the concept of Al-Anisim. The Gemara is 600 years later. You know, it's hundreds of years later included. The Gemara does, the war is just, that was just the means to the end. The goal is not the war, right? Who cares? We unfortunately, we had a fight. We discussed last week the debate is wearing military uniforms carrying on Shabbos. So when everybody knows our nations glorify the military. That's wonderful. That's honor. It's clothing. And the Chachamim say, no, that's terrible. That somebody has to be a soldier is a terrible thing. We pray for the end of war. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation. We're going to make our, what's the pasuk, into plowshares, our spears into plowshares, right? So war is a terrible thing. So the Gemara is not interested in talking about the war. The Gemara wants to talk about the legacy of Hanukkah. And the legacy of Hanukkah's light is the legacy of Hanukkah's learning. The legacy of Torah is Torah. So that's why perhaps that's why you have that, the difference. Or prayer is, you know, how it happened. How did the miracle happen? We beat the Greeks. Why did it happen? What was the purpose? The purpose is the rededication of temples. I don't know. You don't have to like this answer, but it is very interesting. Now, of course, that the total divergence in the way it is presented in the Siddur and the way it's presented in the Gemara. Now, I'm sure everybody knows on a scholarly point of view, right? None of the early sources make mention of the oil. You know, it was at Adlai. So there was interesting. I told Mark Shapiro, Dr. Shapiro, of course, you know, who speaks every Monday night. So, you know, I was rereading his article last night that he wrote a few years ago about, it's already, you know, that in the 19th century, I'm not talking about academics, so I'm talking about Rabbanim, you know, who wrote Sfarim, like with long beards, raised the issue that maybe the miracle of the oil didn't really happen. Maybe it was added. I wouldn't teach this to children, but I don't know, maybe should, I'm not sure. But he raises the issue is that maybe the miracle of the oil was added later. We know it's not mentioned in the early sources. That doesn't mean anything. It could be like, as the Torah Tmima says, very few people knew about it. It happened in the temple, but that's just an interesting idea. And even if it's true, you know what? I know for many people that may come as a shock and maybe close your ears, whatever. But for other people, it's actually a beautiful thing. We always do that. We always recreate, you know, stories and may put meaning. And then there's the same way Midrashim are not meant literally. And the Rambam says that everybody, he's a fool who believes Midrashim literally. So too, it could be. I'm not saying it's the same. I'm not saying the miracle didn't happen. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying if one says that, doesn't make you a heretic. It's not one of the 13 principles of the Rambam, you know, but then, and it could be for some people might need that, because for some people who can't believe in this, remember, this is after the period of prophecy, right? So the Gemara says that Hanukkah, that Esther is the last of the miracles. So the Gemara says, what about Esther, that's the miracles? What about Hanukkah? Where it says, oh, the last of the miracles that made it in Tanakh. Like, you know, Hanukkah, as Dr. Sokolow has been talking, Hanukkah, there's no book of Hanukkah in Tanakh. But the simple reading of the Gemara before that question is, right, there was no obvious miracle. Of course, we Jews believe everything is a miracle. The fact that the sun rises in the morning is a miracle. That's the whole essence of Judaism. Everything is dependent on God. We call it Nes Niglan, a Nes Nistar. The Ramban develops that at great length. Everything is a miracle. The fact that that's Birchat HaShachar, all of prayer. We thank God. Everything we can do. But you know, miracles that don't work within the realm of nature, the question is, when did they stop? So we know they happened in the, we strongly believe, I seem to have evidence, they happened in the first temple. But during the second temple, it's a little bit interesting that did you have, now it could be a simple reading, it could be a miracle. They managed to squeeze 8 days when they thought there's one. It's not a miracle. We can all do that. In other words, a lot of things, what we call a miracle. You know, if the Toronto Maple Leafs win the Stanley Cup this year, that'll be a miracle. It's not literally a miracle. It's just a miracle. So it could be the same thing. That's neither here nor there, but I just raise the issue. So, of course, the first rabbi who raised it, you can look on the Sfarim blog, who raised it with a long beard, a big gadol. So, of course, he was, people yelled and screamed at him. Obviously, these are not things. And you're right. Maybe it's dangerous to teach that to some people. Maybe it's not. Anyway, but in that context, I do want to mention a fascinating article by Danny Sperber. In Minhagei Yisrael. I'm just curious. How many people have ever read parts of Minhagei Yisrael? Anybody? Anybody? You can put in your chat bar. I'll try to share Mark's article later. Yeah. So that Minhagei Yisrael, that Danny Sperber, I've mentioned his name a number of times. He is now in his 80s. Danny Sperber, just in his early 80s. I had the schut to have him as a teacher when I was in Beit Morasha in 1993, 94. He ran the Talmud department at Bar Ilan for many years. He's a historian. He's an art historian in addition to being a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He learned in Hebron Yeshiva for many, many years. He comes from England and he's a professor. His expertise for years when he was, a young professor and people hadn't heard of him, his expertise was realia of the Talmud. You know, what did a Roman bathhouse look like? I think I mentioned he gave a whole class once. What did parties, how were parties done in the Roman period? You know, you understand Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, how were invitations sent out, mailed out during the time of Tisha B'Av, Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. That was his specialty, Roman coins and Greek, everything, realia. So he's in so many YPOs. So he wrote this, one Press Yisrael, like the Nobel Prize of Israel, the equivalent, 8 volumes, Minhagei Yisrael. So one of his volumes is dedicated totally to Hanukkah. It's a whole volume on Hanukkah. So it's all on Minhagim, the history of Minhagim, etc. So he quotes here, we know that the temple was Hanukkah, it's the 25th of Kislev. That means dedication. Chanu b'kafei, right? I'm sure you've all heard that. They rested on the 25th, kafei, the 25th of Kislev. Now, we know the 25th of Kislev has historical importance because it's mentioned in Haggai. Haggai was one of the three prophets. The transition between prophecy, perhaps miracles, that's the question. Do miracles end with prophecy? But the transition from the prophetic period to the rabbinic period happens at the beginning of the second temple period of Soloveitchik. Developed that at great length. Soloveitchik was a big, small C conservative when it came to our Sidur. He didn't he didn't add anything to our Sidur. He felt it's inappropriate. We don't have the right. We don't agree with him. Even Rav Lichtenstein didn't agree with him in a sense. You can't change Nachem because we have a state of Israel. You can't add Piyutim, can't add Lamentations for the Holocaust. Only people who wrote like in Ruach HaKodesh with prophecy could write prayer. And that's a rough basis that the Gemara says that the Amidah, we spoke the first class, I believe. The Amidah was done by the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, the men of the Great Assembly, the time of Ezra, when they rebuilt the Second Temple. And among them were Kamin Nevi'im. The Gemara makes a point. The Anshei Knesset, among them, among the 120, were a few prophets. Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, Mordechai, maybe is Malachi, right? Esther, Mordechai, right? So the Gemara, the Rav Soloveitchik felt, the Gemara's point that only a prophet can really compose a prayer. So that view hasn't really been accepted, even within the top students of Rav Soloveitchik, but it's a very interesting idea. And prayer, it has to be written with great, not anybody can write a prayer. But why are you saying that? So, why was I saying that for a second? Now I forget what was my connection. But anyway, Danny Sperber, if you can remind me why I was saying that, that'd be great. But what does he say? So he talks about Hanukkah. I know. The 25th of Kislev was a special day. So Haggai, one of the prophets who comes back to help build the second temple, dedicates the temple the night of the 24th, the 25th of Kislev. Why? So that again, Hanukkah. So there's something special. So it would make sense. So you can say it's just an amazing coincidence, that 300 years later, that the third temple, so to speak, right? The rededication of the second temple is also on the 25th of Kislev. But Danish River raises, not him, he quotes many problems with that explanation. First of all, what do you think? They walked into the temple, right? So why did the miracle last 8 days? Because it took them that long to get the oil. They didn't have enough oil, so they had to get new oil. New, the people are impure, that's a week. So you go to mikveh, you have to, you're impure for at least a week, until, or they had to travel and get the olives and squeeze them. It took a week. So that's why we needed eight days of the holiday of Hanukkah. Now, what about the altar? What do you think the Greeks, they think the temple looked like normal? We know from all our sources, the Greeks, they rampaged the temple. They put in pagan idols. They totally destroyed the temple. What's going on here? So he quotes, it's obvious, just nobody reads these sources. So he quotes in Megillat Tanit, which is our source of Hanukkah. Remember, the Gemara comes, Megillat Tanit was the scroll written that listed all the holidays that used to be celebrated during the second temple period. They were all abolished. That's what we spoke about last week. Why did we retain Hanukkah? Hanukkah doesn't make any sense in the modern period. There's no temple. There's no Jewish sovereignty. So that was our discussion last week. So in Megillat Tanit, it actually says that the Maccabim came into the temple on the 23rd of Cheshvan. And he has a whole 20-page article here explaining that basically what happened is they had their spears, because the Gemara discusses what did they light with. The Gemara is about Rav Zevin. He begins by quoting Rav Zevin's article on Hanukkah with about 28 questions on Hanukkah. On the story, it doesn't make sense. Weren't they tamei? Weren't they impure? The whole story didn't make sense. All the questions that Gedol Yisrael, the great sages, have asked on this little passage about Hanukkah. So each one has this answer, and then the question, the answer. So then we're just wondering, when you have 25 questions on something, maybe the whole thing, like there's you can answer each individual question, but maybe there's a whole new way to look at the whole idea. And so he says, because one of the things is, how did they light? It's very nice that the oil was pure. Nobody had touched the oil. It was a sealed container, right? The whole idea is that if somebody touches it, the oil becomes impure. But how did the Maccabim touch? How did they light the oil? Where did they get the oil from? So they said they lit it with their spears, their war spears. But how did that work? It's made of metal. Oh, they turned upside down. So he had developed a regalacha. Basically, he says they came into the Beit HaMikdash, the 23rd. They turned over their spears. They lit the menorah immediately. And that's when the miracle happened, 8 days. It lasted, they lit. And then during that time, they got menorah. But it took them a month or two to clean up the temple. The temple wasn't ready for service. Temple wasn't ready, completed. So what they did was then, when they're going to have the dedication, that was the 25th of Kislev. They dedicated it on the 25th of Kislev. The miracle, and this is pretty clear. It's almost black and white. It's not exactly black and white, but it's because it says they came in on the 23rd and they lit the menorah. That, like I said, the early sources don't mention the miracle of the oil. But so the assumption is that's when the sort of oil story happened, on the 23rd of Cheshvan. And then it took them a month to clean up. And then, okay, if we're going to dedicate it, let's dedicate it on the 25th of Kislev, because that is great significance. Everybody does that. You dedicate something, you know, in Canada, we'll make it on July 1st. You know, become the member of the Order of Canada on July the 1st, because that's a special day. So you do things. We push up. The Gemara even says that there's a famous midrash that the Mishkan, and built in the desert, was ready on the 25th of Kislev. But they didn't want to dedicate it on the 25th of Kislev. They wanted to get it on the 1st of Nisan, a special day. Because the 1st of Nisan, a year earlier, was when they began leaving Egypt. That's when God comes to Moshe, set up a calendar. In 2 weeks, you're going to leave Egypt. So the 1st of Nisan, HaChodesh HaZeh Lechem Rosh Chodeshim, right? Nisan is the first one. That's the beginning of the Exodus. That's the beginning of Jewish history. So the 1st of Nisan is a really important date. So we wanted a link. That's how the Medrash says. The Medrash said, we wanted the Exodus. What's the goal of the Exodus? To build a Mishkan. That's what the Ramban says. Right? If we were editing the Chumash, the boring parsha, Truma, Tetzava, Vayakel, Pekudei, that belongs in Vayikra. What's it doing in Shmot? Right? Shmot is the story to the Exodus. And why do we have the Exodus? To get the Torah at Mount Sinai. That's how most people know. The Ramban says that wasn't the Torah, was just a stop on the way. Of course, it's important. But the goal is to build the Mishkan. was to build the tabernacle to God, that house to breathe. So therefore, the Mishkan has to be in Sefer Shemot. The Exodus only ends when they build the Mishkan. So the Exodus began on the first of Nisan. So therefore, they wanted to dedicate the Mishkan a year later. It's a beautiful idea. That's how the Midrash says. So the Midrash then continues, but that's not fair to Hanukkah. That's not fair. The 25th of Kislev, they felt left out. So God said, don't worry. Don't worry. In another 1,500 years, the 25th of Kislev will become a special day. That becomes the day of Hanukkah. And therefore, the second temple is dedicated on the 25th of Kislev. We don't know why. There's no reason that, I mean, that has to be dedicated on some day. But that they would rededicate it would make then a lot of sense. But it doesn't, the oil and the miracle of the oil and the dedication of the temple don't have to be at the same time. And I'll just show you, perhaps, let's go to our sources a little bit. So if you read the Talmud, what am I doing here? Wrong source, okay. This is a Sfarim book. This is not the article, but I'll try to get you the article. Where am I looking here? Here it is. My Chanukah, we did this Gemara a little last week. Bekafei bekislev yomei the Chanukah tamei. On the 25th of Kislev, Chanukah is 8 days. Why? Kishenichnesu yivanim lehecha, because when the Greeks entered in the temple and the Beit HaShemoneh, why? The Gemara doesn't say this happened on the 25th of Kislev. We 25th of Kislev is when we dedicated the temple. Why? Because the Yavanim went in. And they only found one, blah, blah, blah. And then Lashana Cheret. And another, remember, we discussed last week, Lashana Cheret for our time. But Lashana Cheret also means, in other words, in another time it became a holiday. So another time you don't have to do it on the first day they came in. What's the date? Lashana Cheret. When they make Hanukkah later, what date are we going to choose? So they're going to choose this special date. It didn't have to be the same day. Okay, that's you can take it or leave it, but that's perhaps such an interesting thing. That's always reading the sources, whatever. It's very interesting. It answers a lot of questions because it's very nice that they could light the menorah, but the menorah is only a small part of what goes on in the temple if the Mizbeach was destroyed, right? The Gemara, the Mishnah in Chagiga talk about that. What did they do when everybody came to Israel to the Beit HaMikdash on Yamim Tovim? They were afraid things would get tameh. It takes time to fix things. Okay. Let's move on. Let's discuss a general point of Alanisim, and then I will get to some of the specific points. So, how many people were in Menachem Levi's class on Sunday? I only say because I was going to quote this Gemara last week, and I say, no, I'll do it next week. Of course, he quoted this Gemara already, but I hope, whatever. So, let me quote the Gemara, and I'll just as maybe say something he didn't say, and I'm sure not everybody was at the class, and even if you were, maybe it's a review is always good. So before I start, okay, so Chanukah is all Anisim is all about gratitude. We talk about Halal and Hoda. So who's the first person to have ingratitude in the Torah? Who's the first person who was didn't have any
Leah.
No, Leah had gratitude. Who is the first person who showed ingratitude? I'm sorry?
Malki Tzedek.
Why? Malki Tzedek. He came to Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem Hotzi Yechem V'Yayin. I think he showed gratitude. He showed the King of Storm didn't. The King of Storm didn't show any gratitude. Lot didn't show any gratitude. He would say, we don't hear a word from him. Right. Storm doesn't show any gratitude. Right. Malki Tzedek probably did, I think. But you don't have to go so far. Believe me. It doesn't take long. Right. If I ask you, who was the first murder? How long did it take for the first murder? Didn't take very long. Took a half a generation. I don't know. I don't know if generation one is Adam or Cain and Hevel. I'm not sure how you want to count it, who were born, as babies. So didn't take long for murder. How long did it take for ingratitude? Took less time. Less time. Less time is, took the one day, Adam. So that's a beautiful comment of Rashi. Adam and Chava are, enjoying the non-apples, the etrog, whatever fruit they were eating, the four views of the sages, but nobody says it was an apple. Okay, fine. The etrog, the olive, the etrog, the date, or the fig. I think those are the four opinions in Midrashim. We obviously, nobody knows and we don't care. It's all symbolic. In other words, what does the etrog represent? What does the zayit represent? Obviously, that's what the rabbis are debating. They're not telling historically what he ate. And obviously for Christianity, I don't know, the apples important. I don't exactly know why, but whatever. So what happens? God approaches man, and what does Adam say? It's her fault. It's her fault. And what does he say? Ha'isha asher natata li, the woman who you gave me. Actually, he was blaming God. God, you created a wife, Aser Kenegdo. Your fault. You shouldn't have given me. You wanted me not to sin. Don't create woman. Asha asher natata. You know, what can I tell you? I'm just quoting Adam. Don't get upset at me. And what does Rashi say? Kan kafar kafui betova. He denied goodness. He showed ingratitude because God created woman to be a partner with man, and it was an act of great kindness. And Adam turned around that act of kindness, and he turned it into, he totally didn't have any gratitude. So Rashi says, Mikan kafui betova. He is the person who, the beginning of ingratitude begins with Adam, Harishon. But the Gemara in Avodah Zarah is going to tell us a story now that shows he did tshuva. He did tshuva, and we don't know. The Torah doesn't really tell us what happened, you know. And he basically begins to show gratitude. So we'll quickly go the story now. I'm sure many of you, it's a familiar, I don't know if it's, you'll let me know if it's a familiar story. I think it really was Yoav ben Nun who popularized this Gemara, because who learns Avodah Zarah? You know, Daf Yomi, once in 7.5 years, you learn Avodah Zarah, and then you don't pay attention to it because it's all about idolatry and everything like that. Let's see, is it here? Yeah, Avodah Zarah. So we know Avodah Zarah, this becomes a big topic. I'll just say one introductory comment. Of course, we do not consider any, if we considered the Christians or the non-Jews who live among us with our idol worshippers, boy, would it, life would be next to impossible to live. You couldn't go shopping any Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Perhaps Monday, Tuesday, when it's Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. That's a debate because you can't go shopping 3 days before their holidays to buy from them. All kinds of laws how to go away with idolaters, right? And that's the context. If Avodah Zarah begins, you're not allowed to do business with an idolater. I mentioned this last week, I think, because he's going to praise his God. He's very thankful. He has gratitude. People understood. So you make a good business deal, you thank God. You make a big deal, you give stock. And the pagans understood that too. The pagans would go to their church and say thank you to their gods. So we don't want to participate in their business deals. The pagans are going to go worship 3 days before their holidays. So we have to know when their holidays are. So that's Kalanda. So Eluka Edeyam, these are the holidays. And Kalanda, right? So the Gemara says, what's Kalanda? Well, what is this holiday? So the Gemara says, Adam saw, I won't go through the whole story quickly. Adam, when Adam sinned, you can see it in English, he said, assuming Adam was created in Tishrei, which is what this Gemara assumes. We know there's another opinion of Gemara that Adam was created in Nisan, so this Gemara wouldn't work. This Midrash is going to the opinion that man was created in the fall. In the fall, the days are getting, you know, shorter. We know in September, they get shorter by half an hour a week. Shabbos gets shorter by 15 minutes, but that's in the afternoon. In the morning, the sunrise is also later. Yeah, pretty good at noticing that. People who lived with no lights, they were very attuned to nature. So the sun, days are getting shorter. And how does God create the world? God creates the world with light. Darkness means the end of the world. And therefore, Adam said, the world's coming to an end. God said, I would die. If I eat from the fruit, I'm going to die. I'm going to die now. God's bringing the end to the world. And this is the death that was sentenced upon me. So he fasted. He fasted and he prayed to God. You know, I did a terrible thing. Then he saw the days are getting longer. December 21st, days are getting longer. Ah, beautiful. Olam kiminhago. This is the way the world works. No. God wasn't punishing me. I didn't know there were seasons. Now there are seasons. Ah, the days are going to get longer. So what do most people do when that happens? That's it. They go on with their life. Right? We're always there. Everybody knows. They pray. And then when it happens, you forget about what you said. You forget about, that'd be good. So Adam could have shown ingratitude. He could have totally forgotten about that. But what does the Gemara say? No. He now made, before he made 8 days of fasting, halach basa shmoni yamim, he made 8 days of praise to God. Lashana acheret, remember that language? We had that by Hanukkah. In the following year or in future years, asan le'elul elul. So the pagans made it a holiday and the Jews made it a holiday, right? Adam is the father of all mankind. Hu kavam l'shem shemayim. Adam made it as a holiday for God. Hey, they did it for idolatry. So this, Yoel Ben-Nun claims this is the origins of Hanukkah. We spoke last week about light. We mentioned the concept of light, but it really comes from Adam HaRishon, who here he does basically tshuva for his sin. He shows gratitude. And of course, it's not a coincidence that between December 25th and January 1st, there's 8 days, and that's right. And we know historically, and Rabbi Lieptag, I think, was talking about this, right? Christianity basically took Christmas and took it from a pagan holiday, made it a religious holiday. We did that too, according to the Rambam. According to the Rambam, we took sacrifices, which the Torah doesn't really want, but we have no choice, you know, and we had no choice, so we turned in something good. That's the Rambam too. That was quite controversial, of course, but that's how. So they took a pagan holiday and Christianized it. We always do that. We take part of our culture and we make it into something holy. Maasur, right? The Maasur tune is some German beer tune. Everybody, we do that with music. We do that in a lot of things. We kosher it, right? Yidden, when I go, they don't play it anymore. That's some tune from, I don't know, where's that tune from? You'll know. It's a totally non-Jewish tune. That's a question. Halachically, whatever, can we take these tunes and use them in our prayer service? This was discussed at great length by halachic poskim, many of whom were very upset at the practice. Felt it was very good. But I remember Rabbi Gemara here in Toronto gave a shiur a few years ago, and it was amazing. We know that Mark had mentioned this on our trip to Italy. Apparently, some of the rabbis some of the leaders of the community in Italy would go to the church service so they could pick up music because they thought their music was very beautiful. And they would then take that music and transport it, or maybe transform it a little bit maybe, and turn it into Jewish music. This is in sources in Halakha. Many, many poskim were appalled by that. And others, whatever, just interesting discussion. But of course, we pick up things from the culture and we kosher it. Sometimes it's a great idea. Sometimes it's beautiful. So there you have really the origins of Hanukkah, light, and festival. And of course, we understand. And it's not a coincidence that we're on the 25th of Kislev and they're on the 25th of December. And it's not a coincidence that they light outside. That's where we're supposed to light the Hanukkah and Persumenis. I mean, the parallels are so obvious. You have to be like, it's impossible to miss the parallels. And that's fine. Whatever. That's the way it is. We create distinction. Havdalah is to make fine distinction. There also, we mentioned many times, also from Rabbi Gemara, you know, I love to quote his idea from Rav Kook, Avodah Zarah. Idolatry is Avodah. Avodah is one of the three pillars the world stands on. Avodah, worship of God. Idolatry is worship of God. It's Zara. It's off kilter a little bit. So the Torah doesn't want it. You make a little mistake, God forbid, on an airplane, it's a disaster. You make a little bit of a mistake in Avodah Hashem, it's Avodah Zarah. It's a disaster. But as the Rambam writes, quoted many times, Avodah Zarah began as a mistake, an honest mistake. They meant well. Anyways, that's interesting. The Meiri redefines Avodah Zarah. That's how we, I said earlier, we don't consider the people who we live among to be idol worshippers, even if they bow down to idols, we don't call them idol worshippers, because the Meiri in the Middle Ages, he wasn't the only one, he redefined idolatry, which makes a lot of sense, right? Why does the Torah say you have to believe in God? It's not so much theological. According to the Rambam, it's theological. That's it. We have to have theology, belief in God. But according to the many others, and the simple reading of Torah, it's a moral obligation. Belief in God leads to moral behavior. If you don't believe in God, eat, drink, and be merry. For tomorrow you die. Might as well enjoy life. Why do you have to sacrifice? Why do you have to have limitations, discipline? But if you believe in God, that's how the Torah always presents it. What does Avram say? Abimelech, what are you doing? There's no fear of God here. You're going to just rape the woman, right? So in the Torah, I think not like the Rambam's view. The emphasis on the Torah and belief in God is not theology, it's morality. And therefore, the Meiri says any nation that even if their worship of God is theologically incorrect and they believe that God has a body or there's more than one God, but as long as they have moral codes, that's not idolatry. So he redefined idolatry from a theological sin to a moral sin. Okay. Let's get to Al Hanisim. I see I'm not going to get to the other stuff I wanted to do because that's the way it works every week. What can I tell you? Okay. Al Hanisim. Let's start. We did the Al Hanisim part last week. B'mei Matityahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Okay. Who wants to translate that? Obviously, I'm asking you because there's a huge debate. Whatever you say is going to be right, okay? It'll also be wrong. Depends who you ask. Whatever you're going to say, some are going to tell you right, some are going to say you're wrong. Who is the Kohen Gadol?
The great priest. The important priest.
I don't know. Which one? Excellent. But who is the Kohen Gadol? Matityahu or Yochanan? Who cares? But we'll get... In the days of Matityahu, let's read.
Yochanan.
In the days of Matityahu, son of Yochanan, the high priest.
The son and the father are switched around.
So who's the high priest?
Yochanan.
Everybody agree it's Yochanan?
Well, that's what it says.
According to the Rambam, it's not Matityahu.
What do you mean?
In other words, who is Matityahu is the son of Yochanan, and he's a Kohen Gadol.
No,
not the son of Yochanan, the Kohen Gadol. It's Matityahu. I'm Jay Kelman, a Yisrael. So Jay Kelman was Matityahu Yochanan. That's how they called themselves. So the Ben Yochanan is just his name. And then Kohen Gadol is describing who he is. That's how the Rambam reads it. That's how many people read it. The problem is nobody ever heard of a Matityahu Kohen Gadol. Have you heard of a Yochanan Kohen Gadol? What do you know about Yochanan Kohen Gadol? From what I understand, when I was looking up, this is a debate in rabbinic sources and it's a debate in academic sources. It's not clear because we can speak in language. Of course, it could be Matityahu and Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Depends where you put the comma. I don't know how Koran does it because they put a comma in both places. In the days of Matityahu, comma, son of Yochanan, comma, the high priest. So to me, that sounds like Matityahu was the high priest, because they should have said, Yochanan's high priest. Otherwise, it would have been in the days of Matityahu, son of Yochanan, the high priest. No, so they believe Matityahu is the high priest, because with that comma distinguishes between Yochanan and the high priest. Who cares? But that's just I don't know what Art Scroll does. I don't know.
And in Megillus Chashmonaim, you would understand that it would be Yochanan as the Kohen Gadol, because Yochanan approaches Bagris.
First of all, there's a big question. Who is this Yochanan? So most people assume it's John Hyrcanus, who is the son of Shimon HaMaccabee. He was the one who established really the Hashmonaim and Maccabee. Yehuda Maccabee's killed. They're all killed. He establishes the Hashmonaim dynasty from around the year 140 BCE till Herod takes over in 37 BCE. And of course, we're not going to get into this so much now, but that was a huge debate. We discussed last week how the Rambam discusses the history of Hanukkah, right? So we discussed, why does the Rambam discuss the history of Hanukkah by no other holiday? Some say that the Rambam discussed it because he thought what they did was correct. Remember, we discussed the problem is the Hashmonaim took over the religious leadership, right? We discussed Judaism believes in separation of powers. Mixing religion and politics is bad for politics and worse for religion, right? Jonathan Sachs's, beautiful line. So what they did was terrible. And the Rambam said, Rambam criticized him. Then Parshat Vayechi, Lo Yasur Shevet Mi Yehuda. When Yaakov gives the blessing that the monarchy should be through the tribe of Yehuda, who gave gratitude, Yehuda, right? Melech has to have gratitude. We're afraid it's too much power. So the Hashmonaim were Kohanim. They had no right to usurp it. And the Rambam says, no, they're exceptions to the rule. What can you do? There was nobody else. They had to do it. So that's a debate between the Rambam and the Ramban, that Hashmonaim act properly. So many people assume Yochanan was the son. Now, I looked in the Iyun Tfilah, it's right here, one of the Otzer HaTfilah, which is a standard commentary on the Siddur. So he says something I can't believe it's true. I mean, that's true. I think many of the rabbis, they didn't know historical. First of all, they didn't have historical records like we do, and many of them were not aware. He claims he's the son of Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik in Pirkei Avot, Hayam Misharei Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, right? Ezra is the founder of Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. Again, it's unclear how long did the period of Anshei Knesset HaGdolah last, but for sure, by the time of Alexander the Great, by 323, we know, in rabbinic sources, Shimon HaTzadik is in discussion with Alexander the Great. I think Alexander the Great conquers in 323 BC. I may be off by a few years. So Shimon HaTzadik is living in the fourth century. Hanukkah is in 165. It's a little bit hard to see him as obviously his son, Yochanan Kohen Gadol. So in Sepharia, in the Steinsel, they always identify him as the son of Shimon HaMakkabi. That's just interesting. But I just want to point out, we have in the Talmud, Yochanan Kohen Gadol, at least three different times. We won't go through all of them, but just let me show you one of the sources of Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Presumably, it's the same person. But it could be there's more than one, like, King Louis the 14th and whatever, they're King George. I mean, they're popular names. So it's very, very likely that there was more than one Yochanan Kohen Gadol. It doesn't really matter. It's just kind of interesting. I mean, maybe it does matter. I don't know. Okay. So here, I just want to take you the first half of a famous Gemara. This is the Gemara in Yuma. Yuma, of course, means the day, Yom Kippur. This is where Yom Kippur is talked about. So this is where the Yuma 9, 9b, I'm on Yuma 9a. Yuma 9b is a famous Talmudic passage that the second temple was destroyed because of Sinat Chinam. The first temple was destroyed because of idolatry, adultery, and murder. And the second temple, the Gemara says, the Jewish people were studying Torah and doing good deeds. Why was it destroyed? Sinat Chinam, to teach us that Sinat Chinam is worse. It's worse than idolatry, adultery, murder. I know it's worse because the first temple was rebuilt after 70 years. The second temple, we're still waiting. So the Gemara, that's later on in the discussion. So earlier in the discussion, the Gemara here, Zem Mikdash Sheni, the Gemara assumes the second temple stood for 420 years. We know that his scholars assume it stood for about 600 years. Doesn't really matter now. I don't know. That's a 586 B, 420, or whatever. That's a whole, we've mentioned that history before. How do you resolve that? Or can you resolve it? Okay. So the Gemara says like this. There were only, I think, 18 Kohanim Gedolim. I think that's what the Gemara says. Right. Yirat Hashem Tosif Yamim. The fear of God adds days. And the Shnat Rishayim and the years of the righteous take them off. So that's Mikdash Rishon. What is the fear of God? Interesting. The first temple, they worshiped God. Maybe they did it idolatry, but they worshiped God. So for 410 years, and there were only 18 high priests. It's interesting. The second temple is only 18 high priests. The second temple had more than 300 priests. And we know every year, everybody, that they used to die because they would buy the kahuna. They weren't worthy. They would die in Yom Kippur. We mentioned the Olympic survey. If an Olympic athlete, they did a survey, could take a pill. He won't get caught, a steroid. He'll win a gold medal, but he'll die in 10 years. How many would take it? Way more people would take it because that's their whole life. Win an Olympic gold, medal. What do they care? I mean, now what do they care if they'll die in 10 years? So it's that's what people wanted the kuna go. It was a risky job. But who cares? The honor of being Kohen Gadol. That's how people are. What can I tell you? So the Gemara says 300. It was really, it was even quicker. They were dying even within the year. Same 40 years of Shimon HaTzadik. See, here's where you get a little bit where Yochanan Kohen Gadol is the son of Shimon HaTzadik. And maybe there was 40 years of Shimon HaTzadik from Pirkei Avot, who was the Kohen Gadol, and 80 years of Yochanan Kohen Gadol. So that's already 120 years. The whole temple is 420 years. Then another 10 years. And so then whatever. So then that's less than a year. So here I'll just do the, you can say here, we can do on Safaria where they do them on the English. Where we go here. 40 years. Yochanan the high priest. So you can see it on the side here. Yochanan the high priest. John Hyrcanus. You see what they've written in the Safaria writes? I can't see it, but oh yeah. Was the son of Shimon the Chashmonim and succeeded him as high priest. But later he fought several wars against the Syrian Greeks and local enemies, etc. So this is it. This is what the Gemara says. So the Gemara says he seduced, he became a Sadducee. So I don't know more here, but the Gemara famously says, Al tamin ba'atzmacha yomatcha, right? Also, but don't believe in yourself till the day you die. You have to always be on guard, right? Yesh konel lemo b'shachad, you can acquire your world in 1 minute. The Roman executioner who jumps in with Rav Meir's father-in-law, Rav Chananya ben Trajan, as they're burning him, right? That famous story, you can acquire your world in 1 moment, do an act. You can also lose your world in 1 moment. Yesh konel lemo b'shachad, yesh oved lemo b'shachad. So Mark says you always have to be nervous. 80 years. And what's the best example? Yochanan Kohen Gadol was for 80 years the high priest. And then he became a Tzduki. Then became a Sadducee. Of course, through the end of the Second Temple period, that was the great debate between the Sadducees and the Tzdukim. Which actually leads me to another answer. If I may, go back to my original question. Why this Gemara leaves out the battle. right? We discussed it. The learning is more important toward the representation of Chanukah. The purpose of Chanukah is much more important than the practical aspect of how it happened. It could be, this is my own, I just made this up last night. What do I mean I made this up last night? I was writing a Dvar Torah on Chanukah that hopefully I'll send out after Shabbos. And it's basic. And as I was writing, this idea came to me. I don't know if it's true. I haven't seen it anywhere. So you can ignore it. But perhaps one of the reasons is that the rabbis didn't want to mention the war because much of the war was a civil war. The war against the Greeks was like, I don't want to say it was a sideshow, but we know historically the Mityavnim were, you know, they were a little bit, the Mityavnim, the Machamim, they were a little bit zealous, Mila Shem Eloi, like the Levim. Kohanim tend to be zealous. That's the character trait. Moshe Rabbeinu, Levim, they were zealous, and the Jews who were too Hellenistic, they killed them. They killed them. It wasn't so nice. It wasn't. Well, I'm not even asking it justified, not justified, but the point there being, perhaps the rabbis wanted to totally de-emphasize that. They didn't want any discussion. I don't know. It's a total suggestion. I throw it out there. If anybody has any critical comments or if it makes any sense, I'd love to hear. But they wanted to de-emphasize war in general, to de-emphasize the war, but especially this war, because this war was as much a civil war as it was war against the Greeks, and that was bad. We know the Stukim and the Prussian, we know. So that was a terrible time. Luckily, I mean, during this, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai and Stukim, we know his nephew was the leader of the extremists, the Biryonim, who were fighting the Romans to the death, and they burnt the food, right? We know that the Talmud tells us that there was enough food to withstand the Roman siege for years, and the extremists burnt the food so they'd have to fight. Right, they had that in Greek also. He burned the way to get back to the island, so that you force them to fight because they have no choice. So these were terrible things going on. So perhaps because of that, the rabbis didn't want to mention. Anyways, but Yochanan Kohen Gadol is the person who is perhaps it's the same one. That's the question: is this Yochanan Kohen Gadol who became a Stuki? Is he the one in Al HaNisim? So the Torah Tmima says yes, it's the same one. So that's fascinating. I would think not. But it depends who it is. But exactly. But because if it's the son of Shimon HaTzadik, if it's the same one, it's probably a different one. But let's put it to you this way. I think there are serious commentaries who hold that Al HaNisim begins by discussing Matityahu, the son of Yochanan Kohen Gadol. And this Yochanan Kohen Gadol was a Kohen Gadol for 80 years, and he became he went off the derech, as we would say today, whatever word you want to use. He became a stuki. He disagreed. So that's just think a fascinating thing, but we have that all the time. The children, the grandchildren, very different from the parents. So that's just interesting. Okay. So we'll talk about a few ideas. When the evil Greek empire, the Seleucids, they weren't all evil. The Rambam loved Greek culture. There wasn't, but this particular Greek empire, Antiochus IV, right, Alam Chayisrael, Lashkicham Torah Techa. So that's a forget the Torah. They didn't want us not to study Torah. That's one, that's bad enough. We should forget the Torah. That's a lot worse. Got to burn the books. Have no remnant of Judaism. It's very harsh. There's a prohibition that we can laugh. I can laugh. Maybe I should cry. You know, there's a prohibition to forget Torah. That's why some people don't learn. Because they see they're going to forget what they learned. It's better not to learn because I'm not allowed to forget. So the Gemara says, no. The Gemara says that's only if you try to forget. If you caught, in other words, I'm sorry I got a Jewish education. I'm going to like work hard to get all that stuff out of my head. Or perhaps if you never review, maybe that's, I don't know, that's a slightly different level. But the Pentishkach, don't forget, we know Zachor is such a, that's the famous book of Yerushalmi, I think, the beautiful book, Zachor, remember, right? The Sheish Tichurot, remember Shabbat, Zachor Yom HaShabbat, remember Sinai, remember Miri, remember Amalek. We have to remember, we have great memory. Torah is all about memory, linking us to the past, right? That's what it's all about. So the Greeks didn't just not want us to learn, they wanted to eradicate Torah, Hashkicham. And we know the Greeks were, they had nothing against the Jews, it was all against Judaism. That's, of course, the famous distinction between Purim and Hanukkah. Purim is an attack on Jews, we don't care how religious they are, or not religiously relevant, the Nazis. And Hanukkah is an attack on Judaism, you know, embrace Hellenism. Beautiful, as many Jews did. And as the difficulty, right, we do embrace, I think we discussed this, we embrace much of Greek culture. We do. Greeks brought many great things to the world. But anyways, Lashicham Torotecha, Ulahavira Michukei Ritzonecha, and to make us violate Chukei Ritzonecha. So what does Chukei Ritzonecha mean? So Chukim are basically those laws that rationality escape man. I don't like it when people say the Chukim have no reason. They have a reason. Even if it's Yishayahu Leibowitz's reason, just discipline to God, even if it has no inherent reason, has a reason discipline to God. But I think it's more than that. They have a reason. They're just very hard for humans to understand. God has a reason. God doesn't capriciously do things, just random acts. So we should, Yishayahu Leibowitz believed that. That God just wants us to stand on our head. We stand on our head. The things that don't, whatever, we just do what he wants. That's part of developing our religious fidelity to God. It's following things we don't understand. That's not wrong. We have that, but it's not that there's no reason. So, I think the chukim are ritzonecha. The chukim most express the will of God. I give charity, so I can give charity because it's the will of God, it's a mitzvah, and I can give charity because I'm a nice guy, I'm an atheist, but I'm a humanist and I want to help you. Both are beautiful reasons, and that's why there's no bracha on giving charity. We don't give it, just don't do it because God said it. You're not my mitzvah. We discussed that in the past. You're not my way to do a mitzvah. I give charity because it's the right thing to do. Okay, I don't keep kosher because it's the right thing to do. I keep kosher because God commanded. What's wrong with not? We have a famous thing we discussed many times. Rambam said you should want to eat pork. But we discussed, I don't know, did we discuss the OU not giving a heksher to the pork burger, you know, the beef, beyond beef. We have that now all the time instead of our regular hamburger. The vegan hamburgers, they're actually quite good. So now they've developed the, I don't know if it's on the market yet or it's coming to the market. It is, I haven't seen it, Beyond Pork. And the OU, I don't know, discussion, the OU announced they're not giving a heksher to it. They, not because it's not kosher. They can't put an OU on something that says a pork on it. So I, on the one hand, I totally get that. I raise it with my kids in chat. What do you think? Good, bad? It's a tough question because in the mind of many, pork. But on the other hand, the Rambam says you should want to eat pork. If God didn't tell not to pork, you should love it. Pork is great. God told me not to eat it. So that means if we can find an imitation pork, gesundheit, eat it. Make a big party with your latkes, pork and latkes, imitation pork and latkes. Well, what can be better, right? So we do the chukei ritzonecha, the mishpatim of the Torah, we do because they're right. We also do them because they're the will of God. That's hard. So, okay, we need a further discussion on this. But it's the chukim that represent the will of God. It's the chukim that represent the will of God. Chukei ritzonecha. Because the chukim, we only do because they're the will of God. Okay, one last point. Because I don't know if we can discuss this next week or we have to wait until next year. We can take a vote. I just want to end with Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's beautiful, beautiful piece I heard. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, of course, from Soloveitchik from YU, his brother. He also taught for many years. So Rabbi Soloveitchik's son-in-law, Rabbi Rafael Marcus, Alav HaShalom, was rabbi in B'nai Torah here in Toronto. I'm sure people know. So Rav Aaron used to come to Toronto on a semi-regular basis. We're going back 20 years ago, 25, 30 years ago, whatever. And he would often speak. He would often give a public shiur. So I would go, you know. And so he spoke once on Al HaNisim. And I remember, to me, maybe it's a simple idea, but I thought it was so beautiful. We thank God. Masarta Giborim Biyat Chalashim. The mighty, you know, with the armor. They had the best armor. The weak. The Jews had nothing. Sticks and stones. Why did they have? No army. Rabim Biyat Matim. They outnumbered us 5,000 to 1. And so that's great. That's a real miracle. Then we say, Tumein Biyat Torim. The impure with the pure. And the wicked among the righteous. It's very nice. What does that have to do with anything? What does being righteous and being pure have to do with winning a war? I understand being few and weak. Yeah, that we thank God. This belongs in the Gemara. The purpose of Chanukah, we're pure people. What does that have to do with the war? The fact that we daven 3 times a day, well, who cares? Like, it's very nice, but that's not the miracle of the war. The Rav Aaron Soloveitchik beautifully explained, and it's so true in Israel today, of course, and all our holidays are Bizman Hazeh. As we spoke last week, we don't care about the history. We care about its application. Today is that a person who's a tzaddik fights a war. The Hamas, Yamach Shemam, they don't care to kill civilians. That's their goal, is to indiscriminately fire. the Israeli army soldiers have gotten killed because they refuse to fire because there's a kid nearby and the terrorist is hiding behind them. So Atzadik fights a war much differently. Atzadik will not stoop to the lowliness that our enemies will. So the Alanisim points out that it was a tremendous miracle, not just that they outnumbered us, and not just that they had a better army and better equipment, is they were fought differently. I don't know if this is historically true in the Battle of Nakum, but I don't care. I thought it's a beautiful insight that represents how the state of Israel functions, and something we don't stoop. Our enemy, it's not fair. The world judges on a double standard, but we wouldn't want it any other way. We have to demand that of ourselves. It isn't fair. It's not right in the United Nations, but for us, it's right. So anyways, so that's some points on Al-Nisim. Let's just quickly review, and then I'll take a couple questions. Then I got to run off the chat. Okay, we discussed Hallel. Chanukah is about Hallel and Hoda and the Chanukah, and Hallel is Chanukah and Sukkot. And the Gemara talks about it in Sukkot, and the Rambam transfers it to Chanukah and all the parallels between Chanukah and Sukkot. Beit Shammai had a light. The candles. Okay, then we discuss why the distinction between how the Gemara presents the miracle and how our Siddur presents. We discussed the Siddur. Maybe very few people knew about the miracle of the oil. That was just the Kohanim in the temple. So that wasn't a big deal for prayers for everybody, for the Kohanim. When you learn, very few people learn. I didn't actually say that point. For learning, the few people, but the prayer for everybody, that you have to discuss what's mentioned. Or I mentioned also the war is much more obvious miracle. And then we discuss prayer is how it happened. That's practical. We daven for practical things. The Siddur, the learning, what's the goal of Chanukah? The goal of Chanukah was not to be going to war. That was just a necessity to get to light and Torah and menorah and Mikdash and all the beautiful symbolism that represented. And then we discussed that the miracle of the oil, whatever you think of how it happened, when it happened, probably didn't happen on the 25th of Kislev. Probably happened in Cheshvan a month earlier. But it took them a month to clean up, and then they dedicated that day. That was a special day, just like the first day of Nisan was a special day. The first time in the desert, we always do things on special dates. So they waited, and that goes back to the Torah. The Chanukah already in the Torah, and we waited. And then Chanukah got its reward later on. We discussed gratitude. Ingratitude is the first sin of Adam HaRishon. But at least he did tshuva, according to the Gemara. That after 8 days, he didn't just say, oh, this is the way of the world and go on. He made an 8-day festival and in future years, they became Christmas, New Year's, pagan holiday, whatever it became. And for us, it doesn't say, but it seems to be the first origins of Chanukah. Then we discuss who was Yochanan Kaigoto. It's clear, was Matityahu the Kohen Gadol, Yochanan, whatever, just interesting. How do you phrase it? And who was this Yochanan Kohen Gadol? We know there was a Yochanan Kohen Gadol who was a Kohen Gadol for 80 years. He did good things. We didn't get into that so much. And then he became a Stuki, went off, or is this a later, earlier Kohen Gadol? It's just interesting. We don't really know. Of course, we don't have good enough historic records. The academics debated, and the rabbis debated. And then we discussed Lahashkiach, the first and first getting Torah, and then we ended with, I thought, the beautiful insight of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, that we have to aspire to be better. You know, it's not, we can't stoop to what other people do. Okay, let me quickly take any questions. Good morning. Yes, thank you. Number of times you say, Hallel, I assume this excludes Yom HaSmud and Yom Rishlag, right? Kind of the Gemara. It does, but of course you have to say Hallel. I mean, that's what the Gemara says. God wanted to make, you know, Chizkiyahu the Mashiach, but he didn't say Hallel. So with new things, Hallel is always say. There's, by the way, there's also Hallel. If you were rescued in Entebbe, I remember that was a big discussion when I was in high school then. When the rescue from Entebbe happened, those people have to say Hallel every year. I would say on July the 4th, but I don't know what the Hebrew day was, but everybody knows Entebbe happened on July 4th, the bicentennial. So, and when an individual miracle, that's what we call a Purim Katan. We have a lot of that in history. Purim Katan communities would say Hallel when they were rescued. But Hallel as a national mitzvah can only happen in the land of Israel, like Gemara talks about by Purim. That's why we don't say Hallel on Purim. But yes, so Yom HaTzmud and Yom Yerushalayim with coffee. Can I share Mark Shapiro's article? Yeah, I have to find it again. I can quickly find that. It's a little hard to find, but maybe I'll send it out in an email if people want it. I guess that's the best way. Or send me an email if you want it, and I'll respond. Rock of Ages. Yeah, I'm not sure what that's referring to. Masur. We didn't get to Masur. Masur is in many ways a Christian polemic, especially the last paragraph, but we'll have to leave Masur for another time. But talk about the persecution. Oh, yeah, Masur on the tune. Yes, the tune of Masur is for sure borrowed. Somebody asked me privately, can one use a Buddhist or Hindu as a caretaker if these are considered a form of Odesvara? So I don't know enough about Hinduism. I assume we can use, I, I, I wanted to ask my caretaker if they're Hindu or Buddhist. I don't think that's an issue. And I know with the Shaitos, what was the problem years ago? I don't know. In other words, does the Meiri apply to Eastern religions? That's your question. I don't know. I assume yes, but that's beyond my pay grade. These are things I surely don't want to consider everybody in India and whatever in the country to be idol worshippers. I don't think that's good. If we can, what can I tell you? There's a lot. Tosfot discusses that. Maybe we'll discuss that at another year. The first Tosfot in Avodah Zarah. Was it somewhere near 40,000? I don't know the number. Thank you. I don't know, but yes, many were and killed. If we take notion 18 high priests in the first temple seriously, then people stayed in cities of refuge for a long time. Yeah. Okay. Assuming they had Ari Miklat. Yeah. I don't know if the Ari Miklat ever in use. It's a good question. So, I know very, yeah. Okay. Good. High priests had lived long life, but had male children later in life to take over. Yeah. I don't know. I just don't know. Thank you. But they gave a heksher to pork bits now. Oh, did they? I don't know. Okay. Maybe pork. Yeah. That's it. Maybe it's batel bit. Shishim, I don't know, but I don't know why they would give pork bits. I have no idea. Okay, maybe I have a serious objection. Discuss other historic eras. Yeah, fine, but I probably shouldn't be the one to give that one. I mean, I know a little bit, but we'll have to get a real expert. A series of internal clashes and zealots, yeah, there are lots. The Hasidim and Misnagdim, thank God it didn't come to arms, but, it came pretty close. They put the Lubavitch Rebbe in jail. The Tosfot Yontif spent many years in jail because the other Jewish community snitched on famous, there's unfortunately too much to discuss about internal things. That's why we don't have a temple. Sinat Chinam, that's the problem. Okay, bacon, didn't they have an OU? I have no idea. Bacon flavor. I haven't had this stuff. I just know I saw an article in the paper that the OU said they're not giving a heksher to pork beyond pork burger, whatever it's called. Okay, everybody, pleasure to see you. Have a Shabbat Shalom, a Chodesh Tov, Chanukah Sameach, triple header this week. I look forward to seeing you next week in all our shiurim. I mentioned we have one new series starting. I'll send out details on science. And with Jeremy England, the physicist, going to talk about some of the bigger issues, not the technical issues of science and halakha. But so I'll send out information, and I want to wish everybody well, and thank you for coming, and have a wonderful day, and Shabbat Shalom.